still my heart. Well, it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, joined as always by pastor and friend Jason Hayes.
You had a little false start there.
A little false start. And what I want to say at the beginning of this is the state of Between Sundays is strong.
It is still strong, and people are clapping.
It is. Thank you.
Inconsistently clapping, but clapping.
Yeah.
On occasion.
It's interesting. The State of the Union was last night, and we're going to talk about that here in a second. But what I wonder is, while people listen to us as families, because what I'm assuming is people get together around the radio at night.
Sure.
They listen to the show.
Build a fire, tune in on the radio.
Do part of the family members clap when I say something, and then other parts clap when you say something? And then there's people sitting behind them that then make comments, and that it appeared last night maybe Speaker Pelosi was doing her taxes
while
the president was speaking.
I think there would be a lack of clapping probably.
I think they would be
in households around America, and by America I mean within a 10-mile radius of the studio here. No, I don't know how many people would be clapping for our comments.
Okay.
But we are going to make some comments today about the State of the Union.
I would ask, if I may, one question to you. Was the State of the Union more interesting than the Super Bowl?
Yes.
I would agree.
I had to think about it for a moment.
I get it. I'm a nerd and all that. But I do believe.
Mind-numbingly boring Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl was the worst.
Really unfortunate.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was one of those things where, like, I feel like I need to watch it because it's the Super Bowl and we have to watch it. But 3-3 at halftime?
That's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
And what was the line? The line was like, or
not
like
that.
I mean, the over-under was like, or 46 or something like
terrible.
That. They did not hit the 46.
It was
46.
Terrible. Yeah. At the end of the game, Tom Brady appeared to kiss Kraft on the lips, which I thought was weird too. I mean, I guess it's one thing to have a buddy.
They're buddies.
One thing to have a buddy, but, interesting move to celebrate a Super Bowl win with the owner of the team.
I did see someone had posted some passage out of the Old Testament that talked about rams
and the goat,
and tried to give some biblical spin and justification for their position that the Patriots were going to win. And I think that's probably strong hermeneutics.
They won. So they
this is not strong hermeneutics.
It was Tom Brady is going to play until he's 70.
I think he's
Benjamin Button. He seems to get younger as the years go by.
It's almost like us.
Almost like you know, when I watch Tom Brady and he says he's 41 or whatever, and he's playing at an unbelievable level, and then I'm thinking,
you're thinking this radio show.
Well, yeah,
I'm thinking,
Tom eats vegan and he, you know, all these things, and I drank a Sun Drop this morning.
Right.
And I'm tired all the time.
These are almost one in the
same.
And
I'm not even 40 yet. So we're very similar. It's kind of like when I watch LeBron, and I'm like, LeBron is we're right at the same age.
I did note.
And he's a freak athlete.
I did note, because today we are going to talk about the State of the Union.
We are.
And I'm actually just
going to play it for you.
Right. Exactly. I often joke that in my tenure as a church planter, you know, we've been at this coming up on 7 years. I often joke that I age worse than the president does.
Yeah.
You know, usually every time you see a president from the time they start their presidency to the end, I mean, they
it's
have
not
aged,
a good look. Yeah.
They have aged significantly. Yeah. And I actually looked at Trump last night. Of course, he's not the end of a term. And I thought, I don't know if he's aged.
I don't know if he's aged since Home Alone 2.
That's right. I don't know how much of that speaks towards some help that's come along the way.
But he's still
bronzed as ever.
He looks just like he did in Home Alone 2.
Yes,
like,
and
I don't
we
know.
Say that, you know,
in a nice,
we're still respectful
way.
Of the presidency, and so let us be clear on that.
Yeah, okay. It's an interesting thing. As I watched it last night, I thought, what would be the best seats in the House and the worst seats in the House. And I believe it's the seat right behind the president where the vice president was sitting and where Speaker Pelosi was sitting. Could you imagine? I mean, that would be the best seat because you're right there in the thick of it.
Right.
But you're on camera the entire speech over an hour, and everybody is going to be talking about what you're doing with your mouth, how you're sitting, how you're moving. What do you, you know, like I said about the president. See, to give you some history of the State of the Union, the State of the Union used to be the president would write a letter to Congress,
right,
and that was it.
Right.
Well, then at some point we changed it to an actual speech in front of Congress.
And that's also why you see at the beginning of the speech, he actually gives a copy of it.
He hands them the letter.
To, both to I guess, to Pence and Pelosi.
Yeah. And so the interesting part last night was normally the people behind the president don't open the folder and look at the letter. But Pelosi the entire night was reading
just
through.
Reading away.
And so on social media, they were like, is she doing her taxes? I got text last night. What is Pelosi looking at? And
right,
I was like, well,
right,
that's it's the letter, and she's just kind
of
following
along. Speaking of positions to sit in, did you notice, I think it was the lady that had been released from prison,
yep.
I think it's even said that maybe she administered
over many
of your years of her term and things of that sort. But there was a lady behind her that legitimately had her eyes closed.
She did have her eyes closed.
And I was like, is she asleep?
Is she bored?
I don't know what's happening. I mean, I could think of few reasons why one wouldn't be applauding that, but I couldn't think of any reason why one would have their eyes closed.
That's the thing. Know. If you're at that event, you got to know you're going to be on camera at some time.
Yes.
And I mean, Senator Schumer looked like a villain from Batman.
Right. Right.
He was hunkered down in his chair.
And let us be clear, this principle is true on both sides of the aisle. Yeah.
Yeah. There was multiple times I was watching it with my wife and mother-in-law, and who are not really following much of what's going on. And it was interesting to hear their comments is that the camera would pan on different, Congress people and go, why are they sitting like that? Why are they doing that with their mouth? Why do they look angry? Why, you know?
Well, we today are going to talk about, the State of the Union address.
Yes.
We're not going to talk about it so much from a policy perspective. You guys can find that from all kinds of different outlets. But today we're going to talk about it a little bit from what we might deem the Christian response. You know, how do we observe what we observed last night, or in my case, I chose to watch it this morning.
Well, the basketball.
Because I did choose to put Coach Barnes, the University
that
of Tennessee
sense.
Volunteer
Complete
basketball
sense.
Game first.
Go
but
balls.
I read the transcript late
We're still
last
number
night.
One.
And then earlier today, I actually watched it. And so I'm going to bring a bit of a layman's perspective. And so we're actually going to talk about, I think really important things.
Right.
But before we do that, I should note when we observe things, I did notice that Senator Cruz had a beard.
He does.
Now.
He does.
But I thought it needed some work.
Yeah.
It was not an Andrew Wood type quality.
His chin, for whatever reason, has decided I'm not going to grow anymore.
I'm not doing this.
Everywhere else can, but the chin is just saying no.
Anyways, so tell me a little bit about maybe what would be one of your takeaways that I think we can maybe draw some principles out of as you looked at last night.
Sure. I think the anytime we have one of these, there's pageantry, there's standing ovations.
All the traditions.
There's all that. Yeah. There's half the building clapping, not half the building clapping, and then other times they're clapping. And so, but I do think, I think one thing we saw last night was the tone of the speech hit everything it needed to hit in terms of pushing for unity, pushing for civility. Now, granted, we watch that and hear that and know that could change today via Twitter.
Correct.
It probably already has. I haven't even checked it
Correct.
Yet. And so we got to understand the messenger here. And sometimes the messenger makes it harder to push that tone because if you just do it for an hour and then your tone completely changes after that, it's really difficult to do unity and civility while not pushing unity and civility.
Right. And that's what we're trying to do today. We're trying to look at some things and maybe draw some principles out of it that would apply to our own life. And so I observed the same thing. Mm-hmm. As I told you, I actually read the transcript, and you read a lot of things, but then you want to kind of see how people respond to it. You want to, read body language. You want to, kind of see tone and inflection and all of that other stuff. And so I did see, certainly at the beginning of the speech, you hear a lot about unity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unity is an admirable desire. It's something that we all want to move towards. something that hopefully we want, but you don't gain unity in an hour. Yeah. You're going to gain unity by civility, and you're going to gain unity by humility and servanthood and you know, really trying to put the needs of other people first. And so what you can't do is just have unity or want or call for unity only when it plays to your agenda.
Right.
And again, this isn't specific to last night's State of the Union. We could probably look at every State of the Union over the last 15 years, and there's been some theme of unity. But the point is, unity doesn't come out of some of the things that we're seeing used as approach towards moving our country forward. And so I think that's a principle that we have to draw out and put into our own lives. Yeah. You know, we want unity in our families. We want unity in our businesses. We want unity in our communities. Okay, what is that going to take? It is not going to take simply just saying the right things for 60 minutes. It is going to take a servant-hearted approach. It's going to take a life of humility. It's going to take about getting to know people that may look different than you. It's going to require more than just lip service.
Well, and because people are going to say, do you have credibility here?
Right.
And so what we know, and again, this is across the board, Republicans and Democrats, independents in Washington, many folks that are running for office, if they were honest, they don't want unity.
Right.
They don't want civility because that doesn't bring people out to the polls.
Right.
What brings people out to the polls at election time is chaos.
Right.
I'm scared that this may happen. A caravan's coming, or they're going to take my health care away, or fill in the blank. And so we have a – if you do not have any credibility to back those things up, what you're saying about unity, then people are going to look at that and go, you don't want unity?
Right.
I heard you after the speech.
Right.
And so last night watching – both sides after the speech, you saw quickly, oh, they're campaigning.
and so again, it goes back to these really, really practical applications. I mean, I could go all the way back down to my home, my three little boys. Boys, I need, would you guys get along? Get along.
Right.
Be nice to, why would you say that? Yeah. Why would, and then what did I do with, you know, Carrie, did she and I get an argument 20 minutes ago before that? And I didn't show some of those things that I was asking for. And again, we'd lose a little bit of credibility by God's grace. Hopefully we know we're forgiven in that. And hopefully, that's working in my children's lives and my spouse's wives and spouse's life.
Yeah, that's good.
that got confusing quick. You know, But again, I think it is a principle that we draw out of it, that unity is an admirable thing to desire, but it's going to take a lifelong commitment rather than simply just a few words.
Well, and that way people are looking and going, okay, when he talks about, when she talks about serving their neighbor, we can listen to that and hear that because they, in fact, serve their neighbor.
Yep.
Because they, in fact, love and lead out of that. And so... And that's what we have to do between Sundays is we live for the kingdom. Are those traits in our lives that people around us, strangers and friends, can look at and go, yes, he's got credibility. She's got credibility there.
We'll address our next takeaway when we come back.
Four score and 7 years ago, I don't know the rest of it, our forefathers. So today is
it was an interesting kind of accent you put.
That's what I think Abraham Lincoln sounded like.
Back in the day, I was in a Christmas production, okay, with a church here in town, and I was a centurion.
Okay.
And I just decided, I don't know, no one ever really coached me in it.
On the accent?
Yeah, and so I basically gave a British accent to the centurion. So it was like, citizens of the provinces of Rome! It was very, and I thought
back. Lend me your ears!
I thought back about that. I don't know if that was as historically accurate as
probably
I would
not,
like to have
but
thought.
It probably was good. Good acting.
I'm sure it was profound.
You know, have you, speaking of Abe Lincoln, have you seen the Domino's commercial? Is it Domino's or Pizza Hut? Where he's like talking about his face on the $5 bill. I think it's one of the pizza places.
Oh, yes, and he's yes, dressed, I have seen it. It's looks, really funny.
It is really
it's
good.
It's like the dad is there.
And all, everybody's over it. They're like, we know, Dad, you're on a bill. And he's like, and he's talking like Abraham Lincoln. It's
so,
really funny.
So I was reading, we're doing, as you know, we're going through this life of David right now.
Right.
At Shoreline. And so we were studying. And, this last week we were actually talking about David and Goliath. And so I got into this study about Goliath, like learning about Goliath. And then I got into this deal, like, you know, a lot of people actually believe that Goliath actually had, you know, some of the physical challenges that come with, like, what's the word? Gigantism, yeah. I guess, or giantism. And so sometimes you have blurred vision. Sometimes you have, some dexterity issues. But it talked about there, you know, there's actually a medical condition connected to that. And one of the people speculated that Abraham Lincoln had that.
He was taller than most.
Yeah, I mean, he was significantly taller than that.
Yeah.
But he also had some of those physical ailments potentially. So it was interesting.
That is interesting.
The Domino's guy or whatever pizza commercial was, he did not.
Also, was
he was like 5'11.
Also, was a vampire slayer.
Yes.
I don't know if you knew that.
Correct. Yeah.
Really good movie.
Multi-talented.
Not super accurate, but a good movie. So as we talk about the State of the Union from last night, one thing that I think we both noticed was, as we look at politicking and as we watch kind of both sides last night, when the president would say something and one side would stand up. And then when something was said that everybody watching could go, yeah, I mean, I think we all should celebrate unemployment's low. We all should celebrate, you know, just very things that weren't even political. Just,
right.
This is something that everybody should stand and celebrate. And you would watch. And you would watch people in the crowd kind of look around like,
right.
Should we clap? Should
right.
we stand up? What should we do? And this kind of, I don't have an opinion for myself. I got to look at the crowd and see what the crowd's doing before I stand up. And what do we make of that?
Yeah, I did. I took that away. I mean, maybe the biggest thing that mm-hmm. I took away was this unique dynamic of people on both sides of the aisle. Truly, almost not knowing when to stand.
Yeah.
And I think we should acknowledge, you know, we're not sitting here saying that every person that was in that room is a buffoon and doesn't have an
right,
opinion
right.
And is uninformed. We also recognize that when you've got all those cameras and you've got all that pageantry and everything else, I think it's easy to get lost in the moment a little mm-hmm. bit and not be thinking about what's really being said.
Right.
And so we're going to give some grace there. But I think it was really interesting at times that truly it almost felt like they were looking for a cue for someone in
yeah.
the room. At times you would see people whispering over, like almost kind of leaning over to the other person's shoulder. Like, should we stand? Should we not stand? You know, there was a couple examples that seemed really, really clear of that dichotomy.
Yeah.
You know, I think specifically you and I were talking about, you remember the example of when, the ladies in white,
yeah.
They're, you know, President Trump is talking about, women in the workforce.
More women in the workforce
yeah,
than ever.
And, yeah, absolutely. Which seems to be something that every person across the aisle should be celebrating. And they went from one extreme to the whole other.
Yeah, it was like, should we, maybe we won't stand up. And then it was a party. I mean, they were raising the roof, chanting
yeah.
USA.
It really did go
like,
from nothing
oh, okay.
to straight up. Yeah. Like, yeah. like we are at a football game celebrating.
Yeah. And I'll be honest. It would make, and I would have been able to watch the game had nobody clapped for anything. We just let him read the speech and been done with it. But we do live in a sense, and this isn't just a political thing. I mean, there's been studies done.
And again, this happened on both sides.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it has it in past State
sure.
of the Union addresses as well. But there's been studies done that we tend to, as a people, before we make a move or a decision, look around us to see what others may do. And even you notice this when, if you're walking down a sidewalk and you saw 50 people running towards you, you don't know what they're running for. But there's something inside of you that goes, maybe I should run with them. Maybe I don't
right.
need to keep walking the direction
right.
I'm going. because we are easily influenced.
Correct.
And we don't want to be the one person that stands when no one else stands. We don't want to be the one person that cheers when no one else cheers. Well, what is that going to make out for me? What's that going to make me look like?
And
what credibility is that going to give me?
Right. We're going to talk about the life issue and what I would deem kind of the inconsistencies on the value of life in our third segment. But who was it? It was one or two of the Republicans, of the Democrats that actually stood in opposition to late-term abortion.
Yeah.
And then one of them was specifically asked after the State of the Union address. Who was that?
Yeah, that was Manchin. And he's a moderate Democrat and is pro-life.
Right.
And he stood when the president said, third trimester abortion is something that we should all stand against. He stood up and when asked about it, he said, look, third trimester abortion is horrific.
Right.
And I'm not going to support that.
And certainly, it doesn't take too much to figure out. That's where we're going
to,
when it comes to life, that's where we're going
to
line up. And so we're grateful for that opinion. But I would say even outside of that, man, I applaud a guy who was willing to stand up and say, this is my opinion.
When his
this is what I believe. This is consistent with my values and my convictions. And nobody on my team right now, nobody on my side of the aisle is standing, but he stood. And I think that's noteworthy. And so what is the principle that we draw out of this? I mean, I think the principle is, I'd love for you to unpack this a bit. I think the principle is, on our day-to-day life, are we drawn more into just going with what everyone else is doing? Are we drawn into kind of even a mob thinking or a mob mentality?
Yeah.
Or are we not just politicking of sorts? Or are we really functioning and working out of informed, educated opinions?
And that's the thing. I mean, right is right and wrong is wrong. It's the same thing. Every morning driving my kids to school, we have a something that we say, and every morning my kids say, I'm a leader. Leaders love, leaders serve, leaders listen. And why do we do that? We do that because I want my children to know that leading is maybe difficult sometimes. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes you're leading in the direction that everybody wants to go in and everybody's in support. But sometimes it's being the only one that stands up and says, hey, quit bullying that kid.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's being the person that stands up and says, this is anti-gospel and I can't support it. And when everyone around you is saying otherwise, and that's not easy to do, but what we saw last night and what we often see in a political world is we don't see some people boldly stand up and say, no, the values and convictions that I have means that I have to stand up for this.
Right.
And what we have to do in our kingdom work, what we have to do between Sundays is be a people that are willing to make the hard stands and say, no, this is what the gospel compels me to do.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to buck from that.
Yeah. I love that, man. That's really good. What was it again that you said to your kids?
We say, I'm a leader. Yeah. Leaders love, leaders serve, leaders listen. And then
that.
We go further and say, I love my God. I love my family. I love my community.
That's
and I
awesome.
Love my school. Every single morning, my kindergartner or second grader. And when Evelyn starts kindergarten, she'll say it. Sometimes it gets, I have to pull it out of them. But I want them in their day-to-day lives to be thinking in those moments, I need to lead.
We pray and then say, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
Come on.
Come on. We'll be back.
So, Jason, before we get back into the State of the Union, I saw a joke over the weekend because of the Super Bowl and how terrible the Super Bowl was.
Yes,
and
it was indeed terrible.
Somebody tweeted and said, it appears like these teams, neither one of them, they know that if they win, they have to go to the White House, and neither one of them want to go, and so they're trying not to win.
It was like a balance.
Which I thought was
like,
funny.
It was like a balance. We really want to go to Disney World, but we're not sure we want to go to the White House.
Which,
and,
yeah,
so we're
and I get it. Some of you are going to be listening to that. It's going to hurt your feelings.
Yeah, like,
but it is
I
funny.
Would accept the invitation to the White House.
Regardless of who's there.
Yes, exactly. We're just saying that.
But
some
it is a funny joke.
Yeah, it is a funny joke.
And so it's as we look back, the line of the night for me, and this probably isn't going to surprise anyone because of the work that I do at Hope, but the line of the night for me that really, I almost cheered, and my wife had to tell me to be quiet because our daughter was asleep on the couch. But But the line of the night was when the president, which it floored me, said, all children, born and unborn, are made in the holy image of God. And not everyone cheered that.
Right.
But part of the room did. But I'll just be completely honest and transparent here. This current president, I did not think was going to line up with me when it came to pro-life issues. And I still have some questions. But one thing that has happened is he surrounded himself with folks that celebrate life. And that line right there is exactly what I talk about when I talk to churches, when I talk to people that wanting to help out at Hope and volunteer, when I talk to our patients, that you bear the image of our God, and that matters to us in and out of the womb. And the fact that that was said by a sitting president on that platform to millions of people, not just in our country but around the world, I think speaks volumes to where we should be at when it comes to life.
Yeah, and I thought that was probably my, you know, another huge takeaway for me. But it wasn't so much what he said, because I thought it was further down the road than I would have anticipated, in the sense of it was more direct, it was more clear, it was more passionate than maybe what I would have anticipated. But I think what I take away, again, is out of all these responses and kind of how the night went, it feels like there are inconsistencies when we value life and when we don't. You know, in fact, Trump, we were joking, you know, I'd love to attribute all of these words directly to his hand and to his mind, but I think we all know, as every past president has had, you know, that they have speech writers.
Which, if you're looking for a speech writer, shoot me an email.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No idea.
Yeah, and so there was a few different moments that this particular speech writer really shined.
Yeah.
And one of which was where he spoke about, you know, this moment of holding a mother given the opportunity to hold
and bond with the child,
to bond with the child, and then just immediately turning and talking about third trimester abortion, mm-hmm. and things of that sort, and to see people value one and celebrate one and not celebrate or value the other.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just that. Honestly, it wasn't just the abortion issue. In fact, I thought about, it's always interesting to see the way that they celebrate these people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at times, let's face it, they are political props.
Sure.
You know, and so when I say these people, it's the person that was in the prison. It's the ICE officer. It's those folks. You know, last night it was Buzz Aldrin, you know, and Buzz salutes with his American flag.
I may have a tie just like
right.
that.
Right. And here's the thing that I would say, though. Do we not think that, you know, those World War II vets,
right.
or Buzz Aldrin, or any of these people that either came out of the prison or was serving with ICE, these people are being applauded
by everybody,
by everyone, for what they have done.
Yep.
Do we not think that they have political opinions? Do we not? I can speak with, I think, a fairly strong confidence that most of those World War II vets may not align with some other folks in that room.
100%.
But yet we will cheer for them, because here is the principle that I think we draw out of it. We have a tendency to value life based on accomplishments and merit, right. as opposed to I am made in the image of God.
Yep.
And that is dangerous territory for the church as well.
And let's be honest, there are the two folks that were, and I think both of them from Tennessee, that were released from prison early, whether their sentence was commuted or because of the prison reform bill that was passed bipartisanly, thankfully, not too long ago. When we highlight them, you better believe there are people in the crowd, probably that many that are listening to this show would say are on your team, that are not happy.
They're out of prison. If Buzz Aldrin could have stood up and said a number of things that are probably deep to his convictions, and people would have booed.
Yeah, and so it's a
But we cheer for him because he accomplished
and
something.
And so from that standpoint, this goes for both sides.
Absolutely,
we have to be a people that value life or we don't.
Right.
And yes, we're going to have differing opinions and all of those things, but we are so quick, and we talked about this a week or two ago when we talked about the mob mentality. We are so quick to jump because someone may have a differing opinion instead of going, look, they bear the image of our God and they deserve respect, they deserve value, and a conversation, not for us to just ruin them, which is what a lot of
that
people
That is it, what you just hit. Valuing life is just, it is not simplified down to either keeping their life or killing their life. Valuing life is treating people with respect, treating people with kindness, treating people with love, standing in opposition to them. There can still be kindness, love, respect, civility in this, in valuing life. I think that is the point. It just feels to me like there was a ton of inconsistency when I look at last night's situation of when we value life, when we don't, how we value life, how we don't. And I think if we were to step back and we were to spend some time and reflect on our own lives and look into maybe our own people groups and kind of our own circles of friendships and families, I think that because we have a bent in our fallen nature towards the things of the flesh, we do that same thing. Well, and it may not be as obvious, but we can fall into that trap.
And I might have talked about this on the show before, but back during the, if you remember a few years back, the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yep.
And you had two young guys that planted those bombs, and the older brother was killed that night, and then the younger brother was ultimately arrested and still in prison. And I remember that night just watching because he was so young and he looked young. Mm-hmm. And I posted online, hey, like, I get it. We need to be mad and he needs to be brought to justice. But this is somebody's baby. And the attack, the anger pointed at me for saying this terrorist is somebody's baby was something to – I mean, I was like, oh, my – I wasn't expecting that.
Right.
But we have in our minds – well, he's a terrorist. He doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Now he needs to be brought to justice. Absolutely.
Correct.
But I wasn't wrong in saying he's somebody's baby. I think as a parent, I go, I pray for my kids. We do all of these things, but what if they go a bad direction? Is that they're still my child? And so we have to look at this. Again, we're not watering things down. We're just saying.
I want to note his email was Andrew at. No, I'm just joking.
But we have a tendency to, again, not look at them as actual people, but look at them as issues.
Right.
And when we look at people as issues, they lose their value.
Yeah.
They now just matter
because we
want to make a point.
We've talked even on this show about Tim Tebow. You know, that's one of the big things.
The big thing
pro-lifers say. Well, you know, Tim Tebow could have been aborted, and doctors encouraged him to be aborted, and he turned out to be Tim Tebow.
And look at him now.
Well, there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people millions of people that weren't aborted and they didn't turn out to be Tim Tebow, but that doesn't make them any less valuable in the eyes of God. Why? Because our value isn't based on our merit. Our value is based on the reality that we are image bearers. We are made in the image of God.
And I'll say this, on Sunday at Shoreline, I was, our youngest was six. My wife stayed home with her. And so I'm sitting up close, like really close to the stage. And there's a dad that walks in, and you know who I'm talking about. And he's holding his son who's been adopted and was brought from overseas and about 6 weeks ago. And I'm just watching. I'm listening to you, obviously, Jason.
Sure.
But I'm also watching dad and his son.
You were pulling Pelosi. You were looking through your tax documents.
I was. And so as I was watching this, I watched this little boy reach up and hug his dad's neck.
Yeah.
And just the whole service, he was embracing his father. And I remember thinking, what kind of life – this child was adopted from a terrible situation, and now 6 weeks later is embracing his father, that has a different nationality and that come from different backgrounds. But watching that and saying that is the picture of the gospel, that is the picture of how we celebrate life. That this child, every child, deserves a home and has intrinsic value, not because of something that they can do. are not because of an ability, but because of who created them. And that's the message that we want to point to. And that's the message that can't be fixed in an hour, but it has to be fixed in a lifetime of service and work. And that's what we do as gospel people.
I think Kenny G's taking us to the break. We'll be back.
So I think, Jason, that we covered the State of the Union better than anybody. I mean, I watched a lot of the commentary last night, and you just did not get the type of commentary that we just gave.
Well, we, yesterday afternoon, as we do on most Tuesdays, we send a text to one another. Of course, we've spent weeks upon weeks of preparation for each and every one of these shows. But we did just do kind of the traditional text on Tuesday afternoon that said, what are we going to talk about? And you said, how about the State of the Union? And I responded back with, does that mean I have to watch the State of the Union? And I thought it was noteworthy that actually one of the people that offered a rebuttal to the president's remarks actually said, They did not watch.
I'm going to give a rebuttal to this speech.
Nor had they read it.
That I didn't read or watch. But trust me, it's a rebuttal because I already know what he may say. And we even texted and joked that that's what we were going to do. We were not going to watch it, but then give a whole breakdown of the speech that we didn't watch.
And I hope that people after 40 minutes or so here, or, you know, however long it's been, aren't thinking, that's what I just got.
Yeah, you didn't watch
we
it.
We did actually watch it.
We did.
We've taken away some, you know, thoughts related to unity. We've taken some thoughts away related to, you know, the difference between politicking and informed opinions. Yeah. And we've talked about some of the inconsistencies when it comes to the value of life. Now we talk about the Vols.
The Vols. There was a video yesterday from ESPN. And I can't remember the guy's name, but he's the greatest basketball analyst in the world. I don't know if you knew that.
Mostly because he's saying nice thing about
the Vols. He spent like 5 to 8 minutes just gushing over the Vols and how great of a team they are, and that they are in fact the best team in the country. They put their statistics up against Duke's and we're blowing them out and everything. And even last night you watched, we didn't play our best game, not even close. And we
mostly
still
because
won.
It started at 3 o'clock in the morning. It
That's
felt
true.
Like
it
maybe
so
because
late.
I'm just old and, and didn't want to,
but we still won handily. That tells you how good this game is. WBR this week did a special on the faith.
Yeah, that was cool.
Of the team and Rick Barnes, and man, it's just, they have videos last night of them playing the guitar and singing. They just are a fun group of guys.
Yeah. I would say, you know, obviously, we are trying to do whatever we can to point people towards Christ. And we are unabashedly Vol fans.
Absolutely.
And so we'll see how a little bit of this intersects. You know, and I have said, I love how people are celebrating the Vols' faith.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if they would really care if we weren't number one.
They wouldn't.
And I think that probably speaks towards some inconsistencies in our fandom as well. You know, but that piece was really, really good. Who put it out again?
It was WBR, and it was like a four minute hit.
It was
good. And so all that to say that. Yes, we are super fans to the point that Jason didn't even watch the State of the Union last night. He watched the game.
I'm actually currently still in body paint
and so,
in the studio.
His head is a big T right now. and so it is fun to watch. It's fun to celebrate a good group of guys. But look, we have to be with all of this. We as Christians, and that's why we have this show between Sundays, is because we're trying to figure out what does life look like. Christians can be sports fans.
Correct.
Christians can be into politics. Christians can not be into either of those things. But does our life represent one that values the image bearers around us?
Yep.
And I was reading a book the other day that talked about, you know, when Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself and love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And he talks about neighbor and he says, look, the reason love is so important is because love makes you neighborly.
Yeah, that's right.
You cannot be neighborly if you're not loving.
Yeah.
And so we start with love. And this may be hard for some of us, but when we're praying for leaders that are in D.C., in Nashville, around the country, around the world, It doesn't matter if they have a D or R beside their name. You should be praying for them.
Yeah, and I would conclude our time here today by saying this. You know, we're studying David at Shoreline, and we see initially that Saul was the first king of Israel. And some people would say, why would God allow Saul to be the first king of Israel? You know, he was selfish. He was self-centered. Mm-hmm. He was disobedient. And it was because Saul was a reflection of the people of Israel. And so many times we want to look at leadership, and maybe we look at the State of the Union, and we want to kind of throw some, you know, throw some darts. But we have to often be reminded that sometimes our political leaders are a reflection of who we are.
Yep.
And so let's pray for them, but let's also pray for our own hearts.
Come
we'll
on.
See you next week.
Yep.